C1T. Number 6A.
We come now to the subject of principle. And here again we see the same stereotyped rendering that we had before, namely that the ethics of Christian Science would actually consist in adhering strictly to the divine principle. And this would involve that we would have absolute trust in the omnipotence of principle. Here we find principle as that which can be fully trusted by giving to principle the full authority that there is all power in principle, that all power is vested in principle, and that therefore we should not trust in another power or in another principle. So we get the great sense of trust, and naturally this sense of trust is being brought out in many ways, in different ways, like resting on the divine principle, trusting in the divine principle, hoping everything from that divine principle, etc. So, in order to clarify again this subject, Mrs. Eddy shows it from the seven subtones and starts out with mind, where we see that this demands metaphysical treatment which rests on the medicine of mind and therefore not on the counterfeit of mind, which is animal magnetism. So here she speaks about into what we should put our trust when we are healing. The moment we ask for the medicine of healing, the true medicine of healing, it is always mind that is the true medicine, versus naturally all the various other means of healing. And she enumerates them. She says that the counterfeit is that we should not trust in material hygiene, manipulation, animal magnetism, hypnotism, and that we should not trespass on the rights of mind. Mind naturally with a small m, really so to say indicating psychology. At her time, psychology was not well known or hardly known, so she couldn't really use that term very easily because people did not know yet. You remember that psychology just came up in Europe towards the end of the last century, and really in America, psychology was not taken up until much later. So writing to the American field, she did not actually deal very much with psychology. On the contrary, as you know, she speaks positively about the true psychology, namely about the psychology of spirit. So again, we have to take into consideration the historical age in which she was writing, that she only could write to her age. If she would write today, naturally she would bring in all the new means of healing, like psychosomatic, like psychiatry, like psychology, and so on. So we must always consider the age in which it was written, and you can be quite sure that if Mrs. Eddy would write the textbook today, she wouldn't write it in the language that she wrote it at her age. She would make use of all what's going on in the present world consciousness, all the strains of thought that are alive today, and she would talk about these things. That wouldn't change really the structure of being. That would remain the same. Just as in the time of the Bible, they had the same fundamental idea, because being does not change. That's quite clear. But it would be the literal exposition and literal presentation of this structure of being that would certainly change if Mrs. Eddy would start writing her textbook today. Therefore, we must take into account that also these modern aspects of medicine or of healing should be included here. Just as she said that we should not trespass on the rights of mind. Well, this was a forerunner, so to say, of psychology and psychiatry, where you really invade the mind of your patient and really put him through the third degree, really try to find out everything that happens in his mind. And therefore, we must see that science, Christian science, really only trusts in the divine mind as a medicine, and in no other mental or material or psychic healing agents. This is what Mrs. Eddy brings out here, that treating sickness and sin mentally would rely on the mind as the medicine and the divine truth that makes him free, that makes men free. So this is the very first, very simple statement here. But we can see it's all about the trust in what? All right. Always, usually when she takes up the first subject of mind, she brings the proposition of the subject that we have seen. Then spirit takes the next step and says, now, what are the consequences of these propositions? What is the consequence that we should only trust the power of mind and not the power of animal magnetism or other healing agents? So spirit says we must understand really that God is all power. You can put instead of God principle, that principle is all power, and that evil or matter have no power. So this will be the very first consequence. In what do you trust now? Well, you have to see what is omnipotence and what is impotence. So she again contrasts those two terms. The marginal heading already gives us an indication of that. It is impotence of hate, just showing one aspect of impotence, whereas in the text she asks us to rely really first on the omnipotence of truth and see the impotence of error. So therefore, the understanding must be based on the divine all power, and that would plant us, as she says, into the true path. You get always, can you hear always in this tone, on what are you going to rest your trust? What is, so to say, the ground on which you build? And that's naturally principle. So she speaks about what is impotent. She had already said that error is impotent, also that human hate has no legitimate mandate, for love is enthroned. There is no power in hate, in jealousy, no power in persecution, in curse, in excommunication, and all that kind of things. There is only one power, and that's the power of God. Good. Evil or matter has neither intelligence nor power. So again, you can see it's a paragraph that is very easy, that flows very easy. There is nothing actually very difficult to understand. But what is naturally important is to see the steps that we have to take. We begin now to see more and more through the subtones that there are definite steps that have to be taken in order to form always the highest concept, to arrive at the point of love, which always gives then the highest concept. Do you see what difference it makes when we consider this text in an ordered way? All what I have said up to now in that subtone of mind and spirit is very well known to you. That's nothing new. That's common knowledge for a student of Christian Science. If he has studied Christian Science only for a month or two, he knows all that already. So there is nothing tremendous about it. But what perhaps we have not seen up to this point is that Mrs. Eddy always gives us a lead, always gives us a red thread, which says, go along that way, go along those steps. Then you will not have just isolated facts, not just atomistic facts. It really is so that leads you to a perfect concept, to a perfect climax that will include all the main aspects of that problem. So we come to soul. Here it is already a bit more intricate, I would say. Here we learn something which may not already have known before, or may not have given enough attention. When she comes to the subject of soul, that trust is showing us the following, and that's very nice to see, that understanding that divine principle, that sorts out the right and the wrong, so as to form the perfect concept. Can you hear here soul? You only can hear it if you are well acquainted with the days of creation, when you know well the seven synonymous terms, so I'm going to explain it to you a little bit. You know, we have, in the days of creation, we have the first day, let there be light, the second day, spirit, let there be a firmament, a line of demarcation, you know that by now. And then in the third day, you have that symbol which says, let the waters be gathered together unto one place, so that, and here comes the point, so that if you gather the water together, you have an ocean or a lake, so that the dry land may appear. And the dry land always is a symbol for identity, for a definite, unchangeable identity on which you can rely. So the third day is bringing out really the thought of identity. I can put this in another way. There is a parable of Jesus where people came and said, look here, the enemy has sown bad weeds into the corn. Shall we really, pick out ausreißen, uproot the weed? You see, shall we separate the weed from the tares? Huh? From the tares? And Jesus said, no, don't do that. Don't separate. Because you could perhaps uproot the corn instead of the tares. See? But he said, just let it grow side by side and wait until the time of harvest when it's ripe. Then the corn will be gathered into the barn. You have again the gathering into the barn, and the tares will be burnt up. And so that only the corn will survive, that only the corn will remain. Well, this is a great law of unfoldment that we always have to consider in spiritual metaphysics. Here again, Mrs. Eddy shows something similar, that she says an understanding of the divine principle does what? It sorts out the right and the wrong. See, that separation, that's at the point of spirit. But principle does it. Said, don't do it yourself. Don't uproot the tares because you could mistake them and then uproot the wheat. Let it grow until the inner mechanism of the divine idea will come to that point of the third day, where it becomes very clear what is the corn and what are the tares. Then it is the time of harvest, and then you can gather the corn into the barn. So here too, again I read this epitome so that you get the tone of it. Understanding the divine principle sorts out the right and the wrong. That's the second day. So that to form the perfect concept. That's so. That's the identity. To form the perfect concept is when really the true identity, the dry land, appears. Meaning what? Meaning really that if we understand the divine principle of healing, we let principle operate. And principle operates as spirit by sorting out what is wrong and what is right. Don't interfere. Let God be at the helm of everything. Let God sort out things in His own way. Or we may be mistaken and uproot the wrong thing. But God will never be mistaken. He will uproot what is wrong, and He will let live what is right, in order to form the perfect concept. So really that identity which principle wants to bring out. Can you hear? Principle as soul. That identity soul which principle wants to bring out is actually being brought out. And that naturally demands quite definite human attitudes in order to let principle do that, and then in order not to interfere with the working and operation of principle. Let's first see how she illustrates it here. That general law, it's a universal law. She says here that understanding the principle of mind healing, you should point out error as well as truth, the wrong and the right practice. But your motives must first be right. Namely, now you let God do the thing. You let now God operate. Namely, right motive is here, love for God and men. Because love inspires, illumines, and designates the way. It gives pinions to thought. So our thoughts become pinions from God. It gives strength and freedom to speech and action. Then, now comes the point that Jesus said, wait until the time of harvest. Wait patiently. It needs a lot of patience. You know that patience is a quality of spirit. It is that quality which lets the order of spirit to have its way, that does not interfere with the development, that does not push the development, so that it leaves spirit work the way it wants to work. So wait patiently. For what? For divine love to move upon the waters of mortal mind. Can you see the third day and the waters gathering together? To move upon the waters of mortal mind and form the perfect concept. The dry land appears. So patience must have her perfect work. Can you see this law operating? That law operating there at the point of mind, principle as mind, we first trust the divine mind and no other minds. And don't interfere with other minds. He says, do not trespass on the rights of minds. Let the divine mind operate. But principle as spirit says, but trust that divine mind, that is God, that is the all power, that is good. And don't trust evil or matter. So make a separation. For what purpose? Principle as soul, so that the perfect concept may appear. To let the perfect concept form itself. Now this is a terrific law in daily life. This is the law of the beginning of the law of creativity, where when we are working out something, that we are not working it out with our human mind and say what we want to do and what should be achieved and what should be done, but that we say, now wait a moment, take it easy. It's not you that decide what should be done. First, trust in the divine mind. Second, trust that divine mind is always working the good. And therefore, you don't know what really should be working out. What would be the form of what is right for you? You don't know. You can't form the perfect concept. You have to let principle operate the soul to form the perfect concept. It's true. It demands sometimes an awful lot of patience. That's true. Because we cannot force something. Principle knows much better when the time is right for a new idea, when the time is right for a new step to be taken. It's only principle that knows what really should be worked out. And so one has to have that wonderful qualities of waiting. Think of Mrs. Eddy, how she could wait. I'm always impressed that already in the 1880s she was saying that really we need a timely issue, that she really was already conceiving something of a daily newspaper. And she waited until 1908. That was about 20 years she waited, until she suddenly said, now I got it, now go ahead, and then went ahead. It isn't so that Mrs. Eddy just had a concept and then the next second she made a dictation and said, now go and do this and that and the other. She really knew something about this law of development that would bring the true identity. And so it is within us too. See, we are teaching ourselves to be really Christian scientists when we have that enormous ability and willingness to say, let mind define and outline what mind wants to do with me. Let spirit be trusted, that which I trust in spirit will only be something very, very good. Much higher good than what I can figure out. Much higher good. And then rest on that, trust that, not to become impatient, to wait and let it unfold. And if it takes days, and if it takes weeks, and if it takes years, then it takes that. What does it matter? What we want is that principle works out what principle wants to work out and form the perfect concept, the identity of what principle wants to work out. But then we really know that that is principle's own demonstration. We all had to learn that. We all had to learn that. You know, think of it, that it was around about 1938-39 that we began to see something about the bigness of the seven synonymous terms. All what we could do is to nurture that, ponder that, love that, and there was not a single soul that was interested in it. And that went on for years and years and years. You know what that means? That you give everything you have to an idea and not a single soul is interested in it. And to stick to it just the same. Wait patiently on the Lord until after years, after 10 years, the first faint gleams were there where something was, where some people were asking, what do you people have? You know, it needs something to be faithful to an idea that nobody wants, that nobody appreciates. Looking back, you could see that that was the only thing that God could do to us, namely to give us so much time to get hold of those synonymous terms in such a way that afterwards they never had to be rectified. They never had to be changed. They gave us such a terrific, sure foundation that we could stand on it. So God's plan is all right. We just have to have the trust in it. And it forms the perfect concept.